Das kann so sein, dass ich bei Chesed Shrag, wenn man sagt, bei Messias Daf Tez Vav. Sagt immer, Rova and Rabbi, I want to each explain the Brisa that says the amount claimed by a victim of theft from the Ghana for lost principal can be collected from encumbered properties. Now, this amount is not an obligation written in a document, and therefore should not be collected from encumbered properties. And furthermore, the case is that the Ghana was found guilty in Bezin, and he then sold his field. In that case, because he was obligated in Bezin, it allows for collection from the sold field. If so, even the amount for the stolen produce should be collectible from the sold field. And furthermore, the case is that he was sued in court regarding the principal amount for the field, but not for the produce. This is the way it is normally done. First, one is sued for the principal, and afterwards, you sued for the produce. Furthermore, how could Rav Nachman have said that Shmuel holds that if one buys stolen land from a Ganav, he's only entitled to payment for the principal value, but not for the improvement to land? We find that Shmuel told Rav Chinan bar Shilas that when writing a document of sale, he should ask the seller whether he's willing to obligate himself for payments of lost principal, improvements, and produce from his best property. And if he is, it should be written into the document. Now, this can't be talking about a case where the land is repossessed by a creditor, because Shmuel says that a creditor is entitled to repossess improvements to the land, but not produce. Therefore, it must be talking about a case where the field was stolen and sold, and if it's repossessed by the true owner, and we see that he's then entitled to payment for improvements and produce. Rav Yosef said the case is where the ganav is paying for everything with land, and the payment for the improvement therefore doesn't look like ribbis. Abaye asked, we find that even types of ribbis that are only also drabonim may not be paid back with land. Rav Yosef said that's in the case of an actual loan. Here we're dealing with a purchase transaction, in which case the laws of ribbis are more lenient. Others said, Rav Yosef said the case where the ganav would pay for the improvement would be where he made a kinyan at the time of the sale to obligate himself to pay for the improvement to the land. Such a case, it doesn't appear as ribbis. Abaye asked, we find that even types of ribbis, they're only also drabonon, may not be paid back if such a kinyan is made. Rabbi Yosef said that's in the case of an actual loan. Here we're dealing with a purchase transaction, in which case the laws of ribbis are more lenient. We have learned that Shmuel said that a creditor is entitled to repossess improvements to the field. Rava said this must be correct because the language used in a document is that the seller agrees to defend and pay for the land and all improvements. Therefore, it must be that the improvements can be taken away by his creditor. Rabbi Bar Oven asked Rava, does that mean that in a gift document where this language is not used, the creditor of the one giving the gift may not take the improvements? Rava said that would be correct. Rav Chiya asked, that would mean that the power of a gift is stronger than that of a sale. Rava said, in a chanami, that's correct. Rav Nachman said, there's a brisa that supports Shmuel, but Rav Huna explains the brisa differently. The brisa says, if a field is repossessed from a purchaser, he collects the principal value even from encumbered properties, and the value of the improvements only from unencumbered properties. Now, since he collects for the improvements, it must be that the creditor was allowed to take the improvements. Rav Huna said, the brisa is talking about a buyer who bought stolen property from a gazlan. In fact, the brisa says, if a buyer of a field improves the field and is then repossessed by the creditor of the seller when the buyer collects for his loss, if the value of the improvements is more than the expense or cost to make this improvement, then he collects the excess improvement from the seller and the expense for the improvement from the creditor. If the expense was more than the value of the improvement, he only collects from the creditor for the expense up to the value of the improvement. Now, how will Shmuel understand this brisa? If it's talking about where the seller had stolen the land, then why is the seller paying for the improvement in the first part of the brisa? If the case is where it was not stolen and a creditor of the seller is repossessing the land, why is the creditor paying for any of the improvements? Shmuel said a creditor takes the improvements without having to pay for them. So what's pshat? And for the Gemara, either we can say that the seller had stolen the land, but he's paying back with land, or he had made a kinyan obligating himself to reimburse for the improvements as well. And like we said before, it doesn't look like ribbis in those cases. Or we can say that it's talking about where the land is being repossessed by a creditor of the seller, and the reason he has to pay for it in this price is that we're discussing that the produce that is ready, produce ready to be harvested. In that case, we'd have to pay for it. We find that Shmuel would often allow creditors to collect from the produce ready to be harvested of the field of a purchaser of their debtor. And furthermore, he allowed it when the amount of the debt was equal to the value of the land with the produce. The price that says he has to pay is where the debt is equal to the value of the land without the produce. Therefore, he has to pay for the produce that he takes along with the land. In fact, that makes sense according to the view that the buyer of the land cannot give money to the creditor instead of the land. However, according to the view that he can do so, why can't he tell the creditor, if I would have money, I can take the whole field back? Now that I don't, I should at least get to keep a piece of the field for the value of the improvements that you're taking from me instead of you giving me money. Furthermore, the case would be that the debtor had made the field into an apoiteki, in which case everyone agrees that the buyer cannot give money to the creditor in place of the field. If a person realizes that a seller is offering stolen property for sale and he buys it and improves it, and it's then possessed by the true owner, Rav says he gets reimbursed for the seller for the amount that he paid, but not for the amount that he improved. Shmuel says he's not entitled to reimbursement for anything. Machlokes is, Mar explains, the Rav holds that the buyer knows the property is not the seller's, so he must be giving him the money as a deposit, and therefore gets that back. Shmuel holds that the buyer knows the property is not the seller's, so he must be giving the money as a gift, and therefore he's not entitled to his return. Fakmar, they already argue with this type of machlokes elsewhere. We learn that if a man gives kedushin to his sister, Rav says since kedushin is obviously not valid with a sister, she has to return the money to him. Shmuel says the sister may keep the money as a gift. The Gemara explains explains, Rav holds that everyone knows that kedushin with his sister is ineffective, and he must have given her the money just to guard for her, for her to guard for him. The reason he didn't tell her this outright because he felt that she wouldn't accept the money to watch it for him. Shmuel holds that everyone knows that kedushin with his sister is ineffective, and he must have given her the money therefore as a gift. And the reason he didn't tell her it's a gift outright because he felt that she would be embarrassed and wouldn't accept the gift. This is the same logic used in machlokes over here as well. So why do you have to argue in both cases? Both machlokes are necessary. Why? If we only say the case of the stolen property, we say that Rav says it's a deposit over there because people don't give gifts to strangers. But in the case of the sister, maybe he'd agree with Shmuel that it's a gift. If we only say the case of the kedushin, we would say that that's where Shmuel holds that way because a person gives gifts to his sister. But in the case of the stolen field, maybe he agrees with Rav. That's why both cases are necessary. According to the logic of Rav or Shmuel, how does the buyer go and use the land and consume the produce? After Gemara, he rationalizes to himself that the ganav is anyway in possession of the land and eating the produce, and therefore there's no difference if he does it or if I do it until it's repossessed. Therefore, he figures once it's repossessed, his money will then become a deposit according to Rav or a gift according to Shmuel. The Gemara brings down how Rav paskin in three cases. Number one, when property is purchased from a ganav from the buyer did not know it was stolen property, he may sue for the value of the purchase price and for the value of any improvement he made to the land. This is so even if it was not explicitly said by the seller that he'd be entitled to reimbursement for the improvements. Next, when the buyer knows it's not the seller's property but he bought it anyway, he has the right to sue for the purchase price but not for the improvements to the property. Finally, third one, if a document is missing a provision of achrayas, it's deemed to be a mistake of the cipher. This is true whether it's a loan document or a purchase document. Shmuel asks Rav, if after selling the stolen property, the ganav went and bought the land from the true owner, can the ganav then go and repossess the land from his buyer or not? Rav said, the ganav sold to the buyer any rights that he may eventually get in the land. He therefore may not take it away from the buyer. In fact, why would the ganav purchase the land after the fact? Doesn't make sense. Mazutra said, it's because he doesn't want to be called a ganav when the land is eventually repossessed. Rav Ash said, it's because he wants to be known as a man of his word. The nafkamina between the two would be where the buyer died. According to Mazutra, the ganav would no longer care if the land was taken away from the buyer's yarshim. According to Rav Ash, he still wouldn't want it to be repossessed because he would want to remain a man of his word. In fact, according to Mazutra, he should still be concerned that the yarshim will call him a ganav. And Mara said, the difference would be when the ganav died. According to Mazutra, since he died, he no longer cares if he's called a ganav. According to Rav Ash, he still would want to be known as a man of his word. According to Mazutra, he should still be concerned that the buyer will refer to his yarshim as the yarshim of a ganav. Mara said, the difference would be where the ganav gave the property as a gift. According to Rav Ashi, even the giving of a gift, which is then repossessed, would be a concern for someone wanting to be known as a man of his word. According to Mazutra, if he would be called a ganav, he would just say, listen, what have I stolen from you? And therefore, that chashash he doesn't have.